The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
And a very good morning to you. This is the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio. Donal Kavanagh with you for the show this morning. A lot to talk about, a lot happening around the world, but don't forget, as always, your views, your perceptions and your take on the issues of the day are the most important feature of this programme. You can let us know what you're thinking by texting or WhatsApping us on 086 60 25000. You can email us at comments@highlandradio.com. You can ring us, of course, 074 91 25000 is the number. If you're outside the dialing area, it's 0035 374 91 25000. We have Caroline taking your calls and producing this morning, Shannon taking calls and looking after the social media side of things as well on the programme today. As always, we will begin with a look at the papers and a main story on the Donegal News this morning. And you'll have heard the story with Greg last Thursday. Mother and son forced to sleep in their car. Christopher, a full-time carer for his 65-year-old mum, was on the show with Greg last week. Also, you'll have been hearing in the news, of course, weapons seized and five men charged following disturbance at mass. That's the front page of the Donegal News. Interesting story on the inside of the Donegal News this morning. And I heard this myself, the Path to Power podcast featuring Matt Cooper and Ivan Yates, and speculation that the Donegal-born comedian Tommy Tiernan could become Ireland's next president. It's understood that the talk show host and comedian has had meetings with President Michael D. Higgins over the summer, and Michael D. Higgins very much backing the idea of a Tommy Tiernan candidacy for the presidency. And that would be an interesting one indeed. There will be a presidential election toward the end of next year. Michael D. Higgins coming close to the end of his reign. And you can be absolutely sure that as we go into 2025, particularly after the general election, there'll be talk about general elections until we have the general election, be it November or be it March. And I think the smart money is still on November. But after the general election, you can be absolutely sure there'll be a little bit of a period where we get a new government in place. And the new government will not be in place a week before the presidential election talk starts. And it'll start with a vengeance. And Tommy Tiernan, one of the names it's being suggested that might be in the pot for that one. Front of the Derry News this morning, Derry bonfires treated as hate crimes. Police were investigating the placing of a number of flags and banners on two bonfires which took place in Derry on Thursday night. Now, looking inside, interesting story. UU opens expanded international nursing competence test centre. Ulster University has officially opened the doors of its newly expanded nursing competence test centre located at Foyle House in Derry. It's intended to address the global demand for nursing and midwifery healthcare professionals in the UK. And more we're seeing the medical provision at UU in Derry being expanded, and that's something we've wanted to see for quite some time. And I suppose every development at UU in Derry is going to be huge for Derry City. It's going to be huge for the wider North West, and it's going to be huge for Donegal as well, because there is a lot of cooperation obviously between UU and ATU Letterkenny campus, and ATU indeed in general. And long may that level of cooperation and interest between the two authorities continue. Irish Independent this morning, and you'll have heard the story with Katie on the news just a short time ago. Councils pay out €54 million for slips and trips as claims rise. Councils paid out more than €54 million in settlement of public liability claims, the vast majority relating to falls on footpaths. The Donegal figure, 97 claims in Donegal. Nationally, 3,542. Now that's up significantly on the previous year, which was at 2,693. There was also a 15.7% increase in payouts year on year last year compared to 2022. The Donegal figure, and let's just flip, Donegal figure, 97 claims in total, and a cost of €1.73 million in Donegal. Now that's relatively high. Let's compare the Donegal figures to a couple of others. If you compare it to Clare, 30 claims, 412,768. Limerick, 77 claims. Now that's 2 million paid out there. County Cork, 49 claims, 1.3 million. Now, obviously that's County Cork. That excludes Cork City. Cork City, 90 claims, 2.3 million. Tipperary, very high figure in Tipperary, 224 claims and 2.37 million paid out. Conversely, looking at Waterford, 42 claims, 975,000 euro paid out there. Very frightening photograph on the inside of the Independent this morning. A seating compartment on a Ferris wheel at a German music festival caught fire. And there are pictures of the cabin on fire and the wheel there. Now, we know that everybody got out safely. Two people seriously ill, 30 injured in total. They managed to get all the people out and then they turned the wheel so that the blazing compartments are toward the top. But looking at that wheel, it's the same sort of wheel you'll see at festivals here. I've ridden wheels like that. I rode that wheel at Witness many, many years ago in, well, it was originally in Leopardstown. And I also rode a similar wheel in Waterford during the Winterburn Festival down there. So you're looking at that. Very, very frightening indeed. Irish Daily Mail this morning, looking on the inside. This is an interesting one. And I'd be interested in hearing your take on this, actually. Shine comes off Blake's film tour. Now, Blake Lively, who is married to Ryan Reynolds, as it happens, but she's been promoting a film called It Ends With Us. And It Ends With Us looks at very important themes of domestic abuse and other such themes. And it's an important film, and it's a serious film, and it's a film with a serious message. But apparently Blake Lively has been, while promoting the film, also dropping in plugs for her own hair care firm and promoting other businesses that she's involved in. And the New York Times, Esther Zuckerman says that in many ways, It Ends With Us is a brand building exercise for Blake Lively. Now, the actress, the paper tells us, did seemingly try to temper some of the fallout last week by sharing a link to a domestic violence helpline on Instagram. But apparently in the middle of an interview discussing issues of domestic violence as linked to the film, Blake Lively stopped and said, "Oh, and my haircut care company. Oh my goodness gracious, it's crazy, it's so busy, it's absolutely mad." And I suppose it raises the question, if someone is promoting a film of that magnitude and a film of that importance, is it appropriate that they then turn around and start promoting their own hair care products? And I suppose from the actress's or the actor's point of view, the word actress we don't use anymore, but from the actor's point of view, it's they're promoting a film, and as part of their promotion work, they're also promoting their own things. But should we? It's an interesting one, very interesting one. Also, Defence Force members can now retire at 62. The retirement age is up from 60 to 62 in a further attempt to ease a staffing crisis in the military. The other important story on the inside of the Mail this morning, it's on page 2. We're on the way to paying the highest fuel taxes in all of Europe. Motorists look like they're about to pay the highest taxes in Europe when following the budget in October. That's according to Fuels for Ireland, and we've spoken to Kevin McPartlin on a number of occasions on this programme over the past 2 or 3 years. There's excise duty increases coming again in October. There were increases in April, increases earlier this month, and again in October. There's another increase which will effectively bring excise duties back to where they were before the government started reducing them as a cost-saving measure to address the cost of living crisis. But they're going back up, and there's other taxes, the article suggests as well. We could have the highest fuel taxes in Europe. And probably the saddest thing of all is I don't think any of us are particularly surprised when we hear that. State care for children not fit for purpose, according to the Irish Times. Department officials warn care system for the most vulnerable may need an overhaul. Tusla seeks clearance for higher pay for staff who are working in challenging environments. That's on the front of the Irish Times. On the inside, fans at Croke Park showing their appreciation for rock legends AC/DC. Brian Johnson and Angus Young on stage at Croke Park on Saturday. I was at the last couple of AC/DC gigs actually in Ireland, but I didn't get to the gig this weekend. Sort of wish I had done actually, because I was a huge AC/DC fan way back in the late 70s when I was but a little nipper. Always enjoyed them. Also, lots of pictures from Electric Picnic, and the Wolftones get festival goers back on their feet. Now, the Wolftones had a busy weekend. They were in Letterkenny at the Summer Sessions on Saturday, and then yesterday they were on stage at the Electric Picnic before Kylie took to the stage. And by all accounts, the crowd that the Wolftones pulled at the Electric Picnic in Stradbally yesterday was the biggest crowd that ever attended any single performance at the Electric Picnic. And Electric Picnic's pretty much going 21, 22 years at this stage. I think the first was about 2003, I think. I mean, I was there 05 and there'd been a couple before that. But no, Wolftones had a huge crowd. And then after the Wolftones last night, Kylie played. And it would be interesting actually to see, is there a comparison between the Wolftones crowd versus the Kylie crowd? And I would also confidently predict that Kylie, an artist who's had many opening acts over a career that now spans five decades, has Kylie ever had an opening act like the Wolftones before? I suspect not. Irish Daily Mirror this morning. Mescal joined the family business. The father of Irish actor Paul Mescal said it was inevitable that he would end up on the silver screen, as performing has been in his family for years. The Normal People star's dad, Paul Sr., who's also an actor, says they got their love of theatrics from his own father. Michael Mescal was an outlier in a small community. He immersed himself in the world of theatre. Also, looking inside the Irish Daily Mirror, and it's a follow-on from their front page story, we are not immune to terrorist threat. Attack risk is now substantial. Harris is confident of laws are robust, and there is concern too, particularly on the part of the Taoiseach, over cyber assault, and that's an issue that has been featured on most of the papers this morning. But certainly the raising of the terror risk monitor by Gardaí is an issue of worry. Now, front of the Irish Sun, and it's the second last Monday in August, and if you're down in the southwest, that means only one thing, and that is the Rose of Tralee. But there is a war of the roses, the Irish Sun tells us. Daithí O'Shea has been told to stay out of Kerry if he steps into politics. Kingdom Rep Michael Healy-Rae told the Rose of Tralee host that he has everything in the world to be a good TD, but to stay off his patch. Deputy Healy-Rae said the right place for Kerry native Daithí to run would be in Galway, where he now lives. And Michael Healy-Rae told the Irish Sun that he doesn't want Daithí O'Shea on his back. So if Daithí is going to run for the Dáil, now that would be a hell of a ding-dong political battle, actually, Daithí O'Shea versus Michael Healy-Rae. It even rhymes. You'll get some great poems out of that. And Oliver Callan, I suspect, would have an absolute field day if that were ever to happen. Also in the front, it's a hops tub, boozy jacuzzi. Oh, God. Ale lovers, we're told in the Sun, can now bathe in the stuff in the UK's first beer spa. You can have a jacuzzi full of beer, and you can sit in a jacuzzi full of beer. Ooh, Lord. I mean, I enjoy a beer, but the smell of it. Sitting in warm beer. Who would want to sit in warm beer? I don't know. Even the thought of it. And the thought of the smell of it as well. You'll have heard in the news this morning of an incident that took place at the Church of the Irish Martyrs in Letterkenny. A number of arrests have been made, and a number of people, we understand, due in court very shortly. So we're not going to say too much about it, because obviously you don't want to interfere with any court proceedings. But we're joined on the line by Evelyn, who is a parishioner of the Parish of the Irish Martyrs and was in the church yesterday. Evelyn, good morning.
Good morning.
Evelyn, obviously, as I said, it appears a number of people are being charged. They're due before the court, so we can't talk too much about the specifics. But I mean, tell us, as you were sitting in your seat at Mass yesterday morning, as usual, 11:30 Mass in the Irish Martyrs. Tell us what happened as you experienced it.
Just as the two readings were finished, Father Dominic came to start the gospel. And next, just hear a commotion and some shouting from behind me. I was in the middle aisle, very near the back, unfortunately. But anyway, I wouldn't say all hell broke loose, but outside there was a lot of commotion. And everybody was petrified, because we didn't know if it was going to spread into the church or not. But it was contained in the porch and outside. He couldn't, I think, like everybody else, but he was shocked. But luckily, I could see the guards came very, very quickly. But it went on. The mass was held up for at least 10 minutes. And then the commotion that some people left, some of them did leave the church. And then just at communion, Sinead, she went up to the priest and before communion, and then he announced that we would stay in the church after Mass was over. make sure that everything was safe. And then Declan Lee and the choir came up and thanked the priest on behalf of the community and wished him well, and like that asked us to wait. But there was Garda present still when we did get out eventually, but everything was quiet. But it was, you know, you do get a fright because you didn't know if it was going to at you or not, but thankfully, but it was a shame to happen in the holy area, you know, the house of God on a Sunday morning.
You were talking about a lady going up to the priest there. I take it the lady that went to the priest was the sacristan. I think Siobhan is her name rather than Sinead.
Siobhan, just in case anyone
was wondering.
Siobhan did go up.
A wonderful lady she is too. In terms, Evelyn, as you say, nothing actually came into the church, but obviously people in the church were aware that there was something happening outside. When you were asked to stay in the church after Mass, how long was that for?
We were told to wait about 10 minutes after Mass was over.
Yeah.
So everybody did, but I don't think we actually stayed a full 10 minutes, but the guardie was still there at the doors when we were coming out. But there was bands outside and cars. There was a lot of grand presence where I could see just looking out. And I see a lot of people did leave the church.
There had been a few Garda cars in the vicinity before the Mass, but as I understand it, some people actually thought that might have been linked to the Summer Sessions Festival. Now, that Summer Sessions Festival is literally, it's about, 100 yards away from the church. So, you know, that literally is just down the road. Yeah. So a lot of people might have seen Garda cars and thought that was linked to the actual Summer Sessions.
I passed the Garda on my way to Mass because they were outside the Swilly. That's why they crossed the road there to get to Mass. And they had been stopping because when I was going, there was a line of cars, all right. But as I got nearer, they had moved on. So obviously there was an unmarked car there, and I think there might have been one at the other end coming from the Ballyrain, you know, from the. But I just said, oh, it's obviously from last night or for today for the big top, and I would know he'd done it. But there was a lot of people in the parking lot, which was unusual, but it was kind of unusual. Yeah. But on the last minute, I didn't take any notes. I said, maybe there's a christening after Mass or something, but little did I think it was something completely different. But thankfully, I don't think anybody was hurt, and we were all safe, but it was a very scary...
I'm sure it was.
And like, it was, like, you know, over an hour from the time Mass started until it was all over.
Well, hopefully, I know people were shaken, but hopefully no one is any the worse for that experience. And Evelyn, thanks indeed
and I had a friend, so we were able to go for a cup of tea somewhere because you don't realise that you get scary.
Thankfully,
we're all safe, and as far as I know. But the poor priest, it was very difficult for him to try and carry on, and for Siobhan and the other man in the church.
And fair play to Father Dominic. I mean, I think by all accounts, he handled the situation very well. Best wishes to him as well. Evelyn, as we said, there a number of people have been arrested. We understand they're due before the courts very, very shortly. So that will take its course. But for now, Evelyn, thank you very much indeed for speaking to us this morning.
No, thank you. And I'm glad everybody is safe.
Absolutely. That's Evelyn speaking to us there. That's Evelyn, who was in that church yesterday. Now we're going to change tack a little bit, and we're going to go to Zoom because there has been a story breaking over the past while with regards to a mast in the west of the county in the vicinity of Doohery. And we're joined on Zoom this morning by Andrea Redmond. Andrea, good morning to you.
Good morning, Donald. How are you?
Very well, and I should give you your full title, Dr. Andrea Redmond, who is a representative of Cumann na Forbartha na Doohery, who is involved in the discussion on this mast. There is a mast, and its provenance is under severe discussion, and you believe it's time that mast came down. Tell us the story, Andrea.
The story is about a four-year story. I mean, Doohery, we've had kind of multinational corporations. We've had two at the moment, Brookfield and then Ørsted. Brookfield was a Canadian company and then Ørsted is a Norwegian company who intended to build a number of wind farm wind turbines. Now, before they did that, they got planning permission to erect this mast. Now, don't know, the mast is 656 feet. And it is, as I like to think of it, at the top of the mast is a very red light. It's almost like a lit match. So at night, if you're looking, you think automatically, oh, there's a fire because it's very, very bright. It can be seen all along the river from Lecture to Duhurry. And so they got planning permission by Donegal County Council to put, I think, an 80-meter one, and they ended up putting a 100-meter one up to begin with. And this was to measure wind speeds, etc. But on the top of the tower, as you said, there's the light, but there's also surveillance cameras. And these cameras were equipped in a number of villagers, it said, who walked in the area with the capacity to be able to talk to people, say, who ventured too close. So obviously the cameras were being monitored. Now, I don't know whether the audio was pre-recorded or what, but now in the long 4 years, we've been inundated with surveys. During COVID, they came door to door, these companies. They overflying low aircraft. So it went to Donegal County Council, rejected the wind farm. Then it went to Onboard Planola. And luckily, within the last so many months, Onboard Planola rejected the wind farm. And Ørsted, the Danish company or Norwegian company, has come out within the last couple of weeks to say they're going to pull out of the project. So what we're asking, and a lot of villagers have come to Duhurry Development and said, you know, what is the situation with the mast? Because we still feel it's very invasive. Mm-hmm. We have cameras focused on the village and on homes. And there is also a fear, Donald, that now we've had to deal with two companies, two multinationals. A third could come in.
Is there a fear that Ørsted, the company that's there at the moment, might say, well, we didn't erect the mast. That was there when we got here. It's not our problem. It's somebody else's. Is there a fear that
we
might
believe,
develop?
Yes. We're kind of getting a runaround about actually who owns the mast.
Yeah.
Now, there is a company called Gale Tech. Now, there's actually two Gale Techs, and it's just a spelling differentiation. Now, so we had sent emails out to Ørsted to basically ask, is this your mast? Since it's surplus to requirement, could you please remove it? And please put the site back to the way you found it, the pristine way you found it, because they had clear-cut trees right down to the river, Donald. So we eventually found out who exactly owns, and it's a company, Gale Tech, in Cavan. And we have emailed them. We have had support from Micheál Colum and other local community groups. And we have to say, look, we bear a conservation group have spearheaded the fight against this whole project. And we can't thank them enough. But we really haven't had any feedback back from the company, and our fear is we would like this removed, the site to remain retreed, reforested, and basically the river left in peace.
Has the council been able to give you any detail as to what arrangements were made? Because one would have thought that a planning permission for such a structure, given that it's temporary in nature, the planning permission would have included a provision for its removal, and that this should have been foreseen because it's a temporary structure and its removal should have been written into the planning permission as such.
That's an excellent point. And very, very, like, we have contacted council, and I know Micheál is kind of working on that as well. It's surplus to requirement. It was there, it was put up there to measure supposedly wind speeds. We objected to that because of the golden eagles and a lot of the major raptors that we have. I mean, so much effort has gone into the last few decades to reintroduce those species, and they're actually nesting in the area that we didn't want, you know, and it's still a knife edge as to the success of the project. And, you know, so we had objected to that. But you would think absolutely what your point is, that it's surplus to requirement, it should be removed.
I certainly recall the original discussion about this mast going up, and it's several years ago now that we were having this discussion.
Yes.
The mast went up at that point. As you said, the issue now is to try and get the mast down. You were saying there's concern about the cameras that were on that mast, has it ever been established by yourselves or anybody else exactly what those cameras were doing, exactly what those cameras were looking at, and exactly who it was that was monitoring them? Because certainly in this age of GDPR and privacy, people will be, I'm sure, concerned about the fact that there are cameras, the provenance of which and the purpose of which people are not sure of.
Again, another excellent point. That's one of the major issues. I mean, literally, these cameras are focused in on, you know, people's homes, and they're an invasion of privacy. They're invasive. And there was that capacity when people walked near that, you know, that they were challenged. So that was our query in our emails to council, to Orsted, to Gaeltacht. You know, are the cameras still in operation? Are they being monitored? And if so, they're invasive. And again, you going against planning permission because you're no longer measuring wind speeds because the project is dead in the water. So, you know, we can't see the sense in the mast remaining. You know, so we know in other areas that sometimes they've left equipment in that, but this seems to be an expensive piece of kit, and we would like them to come and remove it. Now, as of today, we haven't heard any feedback from the company, but we won't let this go.
So you have contacted Gaeltacht, you've contacted Orsted, you've contacted the council. Have you contacted the original company that erected the mast as well?
Brookfield.
Yes.
Well, Brookfield was a Canadian company that basically just walked away. I did think they realised that it was going to be an uphill struggle because, I mean, the original objections, we had nearly 6,000 objections, written objections to the wind farm. And I think they realised that they had their work cut out for us. You know, and you have to think it's a very positive news story because, you know, it's like Daniel or David and Goliath, you know, small village, Duhurry lecture, you know, and we're able to stand up and say to these multinationals, enough is enough. So it's a good news story in that way. But no, Donald, to answer your question, Brookfield walked out, Orsted came in and took over the project. Now, we have emailed them and we've received absolutely nothing back.
From the point of view of the council, again, we discussed earlier that perhaps there might be some provision in the wider planning permission. And have you had a chance to examine that original planning permission to see exactly what the conditions of it were? And perhaps
names
are on that position as to who that permission was given to and who has responsibility for it?
That's a really good point. That we will do that. I'm sure Michael Collin will be on it. But one of the its main purpose was to measure wind speed.
Yeah.
Now, so as you say, it's surplus to requirement. They don't need to measure wind speed, so it should be removed.
Yeah. Now, as you were saying, the light on top is intrusive. Now, given a mast of that height, obviously a light like that has got to be on the top of a mast of that height because of safety prerogatives in terms of aircraft and whatever. I mean, you know, you'll even see red lights have to be on top of cranes. So the light's got to be there. And as long as the mast is there, that light's got to be there legally. But certainly the important thing is, presumably in order to get that down, it's going to be a job of work to get it down properly, get it down safely, and get it down in a way that protects the environment and then restore the local environment to the situation it was in before this mast was erected. That, as you say, will involve replanting of trees and so on and so forth. It's going to be a big job. It's going to be an expensive job. Is there a risk here that everyone is going to try and fob it onto everybody else because they don't want to spend the money?
It seems that this could be the case. But then again, Donald, I would say that it could be reused, you know, and that the equipment would be very expensive. And you would think that they would try and recoup something rather than just to leave it to rust. But yes, you know, the thing about the light as well, it's frightening too, because it's a very wooded area, you know, that stretch of the river.
Indeed,
and when you see it, you think fire, you know, and even though you know the mast is there.
Yeah.
But, you know, and I think we've seen other cases where the masts were left and everybody responsible just walked away. So we kind of don't want this situation. So the minute we received word that Orsted was pulling out, we thought, right, return the area to its pristine, you know, nature, replant the trees, you know, to ensure that there's no issues with the river and that, because that was our main concern about runoff into and that's such a major salmon river.
Finally, as you said, councillors are on it, you're on it, you're making contact with everybody. In terms of the timeline, what is your hope in terms of how long this is going to take? It's not going to be done over a weekend. It's going to be a lengthy job. Are you hoping this could potentially be done before the end of this year? Or if we come into the winter, it could be very dangerous doing work in an area like Duhurry where it can be windy, it can be stormy. I mean, are people going to want to do work on disassembling a mast over the winter months? Could we be looking into spring, summer next year before this work gets done? Or do you want to see this done as quickly as possible and get it out of your
room before
Christmas?
Well, I would like to see it done as quickly as possible. Yeah. But, you know, I'm kind of aware that people, you know, there are issues with doing that. But it would be even positive to have some kind of confirmation what they intend to do, you know. So the first step is that reassures that it's coming down, that they're going to remove it, and then for them to give us a timeline. And I would love to see it gone before Christmas.
Yeah.
You know, there's no reason. Planting season for trees is November to March, a great time for them to get in there and get some trees planted, some native conifers and that. You know, it's a really beautiful area. Full of deer, pine martens, red squirrels. It is that road that they proposed to put the wind farm on is such a beautiful area to walk. You know, very, very little traffic. Wonderful, wonderful spot.
Andrea, thank you very much indeed for speaking to us this morning. We'll be keeping a very close eye on this and watching how it goes. And do please keep in touch with us and let us know if there's any progress. But for the moment, Dr. Andrea Redmond in Duhurry, thank you very much indeed. The family of occupational therapist Valerie French, who was beaten, stabbed and strangled to death by her husband James Kilroy, are calling for a review of the law to stop people who kill their partners having parental rights to their children. In another case, Georgia Lillis was 16 when Celine Cawley, a businesswoman, was bludgeoned to death by Eamon Lillis. She is also calling for a change in the law. Murderers in the UK have their parental rights suspended under Jade's Law, but there is no such provision here. Should there be? Let's go to Zoom and speak to Dr. Maria Hainsworth of the Donegal Domestic Violence Services. She is the manager there. Maria, good morning.
Good morning. How are you doing?
Very well indeed. I well remember both of those cases, the Valerie French case and the Celine Cawley case, and I'm sure you do as well, Marie, as you remember all too many such cases that we've heard of over the years here in this country. You, I take it, would fully agree with those bereaved children that the murderers of their mothers should not in any way benefit or have rights that they hold on to after carrying out that act.
Absolutely. And it's actually part of, I think there's a suite of different things that need to come in place, because at the moment, children's rights within the court system don't really exist, you know. And so obviously where there's a this particular situation where the parent has gone completely, but there are other situations as well where children's, the impact of domestic abuse, the rights of children, their own sense of safety and security is not considered at all in any domestic abuse case. And perpetrators, you know, continue to have access to children way after they've been convicted for offences that should by rights be used to enforce that children are kept safe through that. So it is part of a number of actions that I think the government needs to make. It needs to start prioritising and giving rights and entitlements to victims that are under 18, because at the moment there are very, very few rights at all.
And there is a potential situation where the man that murdered their mother could be in a position where he could find himself responsible for their financial well-being, responsible for administering their wealth that they presumably will inherit in the future, but that the person that carried out that act could be the very person that's responsible for administering the estate of the person they murdered, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and also, even if they're serving a prison sentence, they still have the right to determine who looks after the children in their absence. So, you know, the victim's family might not be entitled or might not be able to have access to their grandchildren at all, if that's what the perpetrator decides. And it could also be people that the children don't even know are being allocated to mind the children on his behalf. So there's all sorts of complications, you know, and I think particularly within domestic abuse cases, they need to start looking at what was the situation before, in this case, the homicide occurred, what were the children's support networks, what were the family connections that they had, and that has to be a continuation, you know, in looking at their situation going forwards. And at the moment that doesn't exist. There's no way, and it's completely contrary to say children that are in full state care. If they're in foster care, then there's a legal guardian appointed to them. Then they have their rights acknowledged in court. They can have a say in terms of whether they want access with the abusive parent or not. And yet none of those rights exist for children who are not in state, full state care. So I think there's an anomaly there that really needs to be addressed. And also even where the perpetrator has been convicted of offences and it's not resulted in homicide, children are still being forced to have contact with potentially quite violent parents, with no safety precautions, no, compulsory supervised access. And this can even be facilitated by some of the other state agencies. So there is a massive gap there around children's safety and ongoing, you know, what happens just because an abusive situation finishes in terms of the adult relationship. It definitely doesn't finish for the children. And that is a big problem.
Is it your belief that new law is necessary, something along the lines of Jade's Law in the UK is necessary here in order to give effect to those changes? It's not going to be enough just to bring in new regulations. It would appear it will take new laws.
It will take new legislation. And I suppose the big question mark, because in the UK, they didn't apply it retrospectively. They said it had to start, you know, from when the legislation came in, which is the norm. I know here in Ireland, they are actually lobbying to say that it should be applied retrospectively. So that's another whole level of debate. But definitely there does need to be a piece of legislation there. Yes.
In terms of your own discussions with your peers and others involved in similar services across the country, the lobby has been there for quite some time. We have the high profile interventions from people like Georgia Lillis, from people like the family of Valerie French, who make very important and very salient points, echoing, I'm sure, points you've been making for quite some time. Is there any word coming back from, be it Minister McEntee or whoever in government, that they're taking heed of what's being said and that they're preparing to act on it?
I think so. I think they have their own working group as well, because remember there was the domestic homicide review, and I think the minister has certainly been taking findings and feedback from that committee, and the families of the bereaved would have been feeding into that process as well. So I hopefully, you know, this is not just odd families kind of making, if you like, advocacy towards the minister. This is all being fed through a particular structure that the minister has put in place herself. So I am hoping that she will be listening to that and looking to act on it fairly soon.
There was a very clear and obvious focusing on domestic violence issues over the COVID period, when women potentially found themselves having no choice but to stay in a home with an abuser. And there was a lot of focus on that, both at government level and at the level of agencies and services such as yourselves. Has that continued? Is there a new appreciation? Is there a new focus now because of what happened in 2020, 21, 22? Or is it sort of fading away, and has that focus gone off to an extent?
I think there's still a focus there, but the problem is we've also been hit with the housing crisis. So the reality is, and there are two things as well. Women would say that they don't want to leave the relationship, you know, because of the housing situation, but also back to those children and unsupervised access if they leave. Some mothers we have definitely heard say they would rather stay in an abusive relationship and know and monitor their children's interactions, if you like, with the abusive partner, rather than to leave and to have the children on their own being exposed potentially to further abuse. And particularly if they're very young children where they can't articulate what's happening. So there are two particular issues there. And that's why this legislation and other pieces of legislation need to come in that actually reinforce that the government is serious about supporting both adult victims and child victims of domestic abuse and appreciating what is actually happening. So yeah, it is still part. There are still a lot of obstacles for women to leave abusive situations, and particularly where there are children involved. Because nobody wants to make children homeless either. So, yeah, it is still definitely a problem.
Dr. Marie Hainsworth, manager of the Donegal Domestic Violence Services, thank you very much indeed for speaking to us this morning. Obviously, we'll be keeping a very close eye on this one. But for the moment, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you.
That's Dr. Marie Hainsworth there. A very important and pressing issue that does need to be discussed. Let's take a look at some of your comments and questions that have been coming through to us. Caller says, I wonder if my local church can explain the push for people who use church envelopes anonymously to identify themselves. Once again, they're asking people to register their names. Lots of people just drop cash in the basket. So what's the difference in making an anonymous donation via the envelope? It's really putting me off donating at all. Lots of people give anonymously to charities and are not harassed to give their name. I could understand if it was about thousands of euro, but let's face it, we're talking about a 5 or a 10 euro donation on a Sunday. And I don't know, I suppose really it's for the church's own records. The church puts envelopes out, and it's probably trying to see what's coming in, what isn't coming in. It's an interesting question, though. I want to just let you know that on Sunday, the 8th of September, now that's not all that far away, that's what, just over 2 weeks away, The 9 till noon show will broadcast live from the London Irish. It's 3 weeks away now that I think about it, actually. But it's on Sunday. It's 3 weeks yesterday, I think. But the 9 till noon show will broadcast live from the London Irish Charity Vintage Club in Greenford from 12 noon until 2. Greg's done that show before in the past, and it's been a very successful show and a very interesting one. And lots of Donegal people who have relatives in London have been onto them, and they've been going over and back, and it's been eliciting a lot of interest. So that will take place on Sunday the 8th of September. Greg and the team will be at Greenford in London for that London Irish Charity Vintage Show. And staying with Greg, actually, Greg is going to be doing a bit of a walk before that. He's going to participate in day two of the Donegal Camino. It takes place in Ards Forest Park on Monday the 2nd of September. It's a very important walk, and it's in support of the Cancer Care West service in Donegal. The office is based in Letterkenny, but the service goes far beyond the town. Greg will be participating, as we say, in Ards. And if anyone can donate to this great service, you can find a link online. If you go to idonate.ie, search Greg Hughes, Greg's donation page is there. Scattered showers following, mainly affecting the western part of the region. Lowest overnight temperatures 8 to 11. And tomorrow will be breezy with spells of sunshine and scattered showers. Some of the showers heavy. Highs tomorrow 14 to 16 in moderate to fresh and gusty westerly winds. Not the nicest, it has to be said. Now, we are going to go to Trinity College, because Dr. Louise Lynch is a research assistant at Trinity, and they're looking for people in Donegal with an intellectual or physical disability, or those over the age of 65 who have or have had in the past a cancer diagnosis. Dr. Lynch, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Very well indeed. This is very important research that you're carrying out, and it's looking at the fact that sometimes people with intellectual or physical disabilities and older persons who have cancer diagnosed can have that diagnosis later and have poorer outcomes. And that's something that you want to look at, understand and address.
Oh, 100%. So the Irish Cancer Society asked us to look at people that they perceived who were being socially excluded. And they defined, so just from what they've seen so far, so people, as you said, with any type of physical disability, intellectual disability, or over the age of 65, and they have been shown to have more difficulty getting access to cancer care and diagnosis initially. And we want to understand is, you know, what's causing this? So why are they having problems? Why are they less able to access diagnostic services and then the care once they get into the system? For example, Greg, is it geographically related? We have no idea. And we really, really want to talk to people and just find out if they have had issues. And actually, not just even if they've had issues, but if there are positive things that have helped them get access to the care services.
Can it be the case that in some cases people don't have the capacity to express a pain, or they don't have the capacity to express they feel off, or they don't maybe understand, they don't necessarily know how to feel for a lump, or they don't have that capacity that they can give it to somebody else. Whereas other people maybe can go to a GP or say to someone, oh, I feel a bit iffy, oh, I feel a bit funny. Some people maybe don't have the capacity to do that. And part of this may be to train medical professionals and train others to spot those signs and perhaps draw it out of the person.
Yes, yeah, that's, I mean, you've hit, that is one of the issues we think we have, that people, they go to a doctor and they're overwhelmed, you know, they just can't say what, they can't express what they have, what they feel. But not even that, there are some people and some of these groups aren't going and getting diagnosed. So they're not looking to see if they've lumps themselves. They're not going for mammograms and other screening tests. So it's really difficult. And unless they have an advocate, they can be ignored. You know, they can be or misinterpreted.
Important as well that people feel welcome in surgeries, that people feel welcome in day centres, that people have the capacity that they can talk to somebody, and getting that across to a person who perhaps has a disability. Maybe what we do is focus so much on the disability that we don't look at anything else, that we're treating them as a person with a disability rather than treating them as a person.
Oh, that's so right. And the technical term for that is called diagnostic overshadowing, and it's terrible. So people make assumptions before they even listen to what the person has to say. So it's terrible. But, you know, it's not all bad. We have, Ireland is one of the few countries in the world that we have intellectual disability nurses who are, you know, experts in this area, and they can help people and understand them and represent them. But it's not all across the professional sphere, unfortunately.
How can people make contact with you if they want to take part in this very important survey?
So they can email Shauna Walsh, who's the research assistant on the project. And Shauna's, I don't know, if is it possible to give?
Absolutely, yeah.
An email. Okay, so I'll give you an email actually and a phone number if that's okay.
Lovely.
So Shauna's email is walsh89@tcd.ie. So that's Walsh, WALSH, or just, yeah, S, yeah. 89@tcd.ie. And then Shauna's phone number is 086-196-6824. So we would absolutely love to talk to people and just find out good stories, if they've had negative experiences, just anything. We really, really want to help this group.
Dr. Louise Lynch, thank you very much indeed for speaking to us this morning. Hopefully you get a large uptake on that call. But for now, thank you very much indeed.